This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh and Brian Fernandez with the top business stories of the day. We begin with a look at the telco space in Malaysia. According to the Malaysian Communications and Multimedia Commission, or MCMC, Malaysians are well connected, and at least, in terms of the internet and cellular networks.
Well, this is because mobile cellular penetration in Malaysia has reached 132% as of the third quarter of last year. Now, smartphone penetration stands at 70% and broadband penetration just under 85%. Now, what does that jargon actually all mean? So, mobile phone cellular penetration rate is really the number of active mobile phone users. Now, it does not account for users having multiple mobile phones. So, this is the reason why at 132%, you have a percentage that's above 100%. Because essentially, one, it's because of double counting. And secondly, also, we have a migrant population that's undocumented as well. So those contribute to the numbers.
Okay, well, speaking of mobile phones, MCMC said that e-payments will now be an important factor in boosting Malaysia's digital economy. The chairman of MCMC, Tan Sri Halim Shafi, reckons that the outlook for e-payments is very encouraging.
Well, Sharad, Bank Negara has said recently that the volume of individual internet banking transactions had grown more than threefold, from 141 million transactions in 2011 to 435 million in 2016. So MCMC said that the positive growth is thanks to the market incentives framework implemented by Bank Negara.
Yes, Bank Negara has been very active in pushing e-payments.
Yes.
Last December, in fact, the central bank put up the Interoperable Credit Transfer Framework, or ICTF, to spur the next wave of e-payment migration.
Yeah, so this service allows a payer to instruct the institution to transfer funds to a beneficiary. It takes advantage, really, of the 43 million mobile phone subscriptions in the country, 70% of which are smartphones. Now, so for the first time, both customers of banks and non-banks will be able to transfer funds seamlessly just by referencing their mobile phone number, their identity card numbers of the recipients, or scanning a QR code for the recipients. So essentially, the Bank Negara says that the ICTF will be effective on 1st July 2018.
Yeah, and effective July 1st this year, the instant transfer fee of 50 cent will be waived for up to 5,000 ringgit per transaction by individuals and SMEs. Cheque fee will increase from 50 cent to 1 ringgit in 2021. This is as part of its plan to reduce cheque usage to 100 million by 2020. And to date, did you know that the total cheque volume has declined 42% from 2011? So electronic fund transfers have increased five times. I remember chasing the story in 2014. Bank Negara was already looking to cut down cheques and building its e-payment system as you know, that during then as well, they were looking
so
into
that. So
we've
made a lot of progress then in terms of moving to cashless payments.
I think you see that in our own lives. I mean, I can only think of one reason in which I use a checkbook these days, and that's for a particular payment that I have to make. Otherwise, you know, I sometimes even forget how to write a check because I do it
so
rarely.
Have a checkbook.
Yeah, I still have a checkbook, but I don't use it very much. I'm very much like Sharad. I think, yeah, there's one or two transactions and that's it. Yeah.
I transfer, and if I need if it's like it's major, then I'll go to the bank and get it done. But I don't have a checkbook actually.
Yeah, on Ringgit Sense back in 2016, we spoke to Bank Negara's director of payment systems policy, Tan Yet Chuan. In that episode, we discussed Bank Negara wanting to encourage usage of debit cards and online payments because cash and checks are costly.
Yeah, they are. So, you know, as a general gauge for Malaysia's, looking at that, iPay 88 as a gauge, it recorded more than 58 million online transactions over its payment gateway systems in 2017. So this is an increase of over 50% from 2016. And the total sales of transactions amounted to almost $1.7 billion. This is more than double that of 2016.
Yeah, so also iPay 88 said that 80% of the transactions in the country are currently still by cash, while 20% are done via online banking and credit cards. So clearly, more needs to be done to spur e-payment.
Yeah, so the e-wallet, according to iPay 88, e-wallets are going to replace this 80% portion. Now, it covers consumers really from a very broad spectrum. And they argue that the moment e-wallets can accept payments from a wide spectrum of merchants, that's the point of inflection where we no longer need cash.
But also, I guess, at the end of the day, is also, as we've spoken about this many times, is about the how big is the landscape, you know, like how where can you use your e-wallet as well as the rewards, you know, how much do you get back from using that e-wallet,
yeah,
right?
Because there's so many of them around. Convenient there. That's right. I mean, that might actually be a source of some confusion or maybe even resistance to taking e-payment systems up because of the varied vendor, you know, system and payment system ecostructure. Well, you know, maybe we can learn something from Singapore in this regard. Singapore just announced new guidelines to protect consumers and small businesses when it comes to going cashless.
Yeah, so the Monetary Authority of Singapore proposed guidelines yesterday saying that consumers and small businesses will not be held liable for unauthorized transactions as long as they keep their account details secure. So these are for e-payments, right? So this is in a way to encourage more people to use e-payments there. And these new guidelines are being proposed to protect consumers and small businesses who may not embrace e-payments because of concerns over unauthorized transactions through their bank accounts. Again, there's this whole trust issue. Also, you know, you're not sure, you're scared to use e-payments because you're scared suddenly your money disappears or I'm not sure what's happening down there. But you can see that the government is trying to encourage Singaporeans to embrace it because I think they're not embracing it fast enough.
I think one of the key things is also the fact that they're pushing the responsibility then towards the banks, really, in terms of notifying their customers in terms of their transactions, e-payment transactions, so that they can keep track of it as well. Apparently, one of the rules that the new rules are being set up is that banks should send account holders an SMS or email of consolidated payments on a daily basis. So that really helps somebody as an individual like myself. You know, if you've used a couple of transactions, just from a personal finance perspective, just to track, you know, what you've actually been spending.
Yeah, because you keep on tapping, and you don't keep track. If every day they give you an account, that's good. And Brian, I think they're looking at guidelines first before it becomes a rule. I think it's still in discussion mode, but they just issued it yesterday.
Right. You know, what's, of course, terrifying for the ordinary person, I include myself in this, is that we live in an age of hacking, right? We always hear stories of people, you know, punching through security firewalls and security systems and stealing data and using it. And you think, my goodness, the more you're out there using e-payments, maybe you make yourself much more vulnerable.
One of the reasons why people are not using it there in Singapore, and that is why they've come up with this guideline to protect users such as yourself who are scared to use e-payments because you're scared that there'll be unauthorized usage of your account. And then, therefore, let's say you have like $1 million in your account and you lose all of that. But that's,
I wish,
you know,
I had $1 million because I'd use it all up.
Yeah. So coming back to these guidelines in Singapore, so consumers or small businesses found to be careless but not reckless in contributing to these unauthorized transactions that are being disputed will be liable for up to only $100. You won't lose the whole amount. Okay, you only pay $100.
Right. Okay. That's very reassuring. Mm. But what is the distinction between careless and reckless? How do you tip from careless to reckless?
Okay. Under these guidelines, basically, account holders, careless but not reckless actually means if you've misplaced a mobile phone or have accidentally given away passwords, that's an example of that.
That's careless.
That's not reckless.
Yes.
But if banks can prove that reckless behavior was by customers led to the unauthorized transactions, then the consumer would be liable for the actual loss. So, you know, you cannot abuse that whole system in a way, right?
Now, these guidelines are not mandatory, but the Monetary Authority of Singapore really has the power to make these guidelines enforceable under law. So currently what they're doing is up to March 16, they're getting public feedback and then they're going to publish the guidelines sometime in the first half of this year.
Now, didn't Singapore just launch a free fund transfer service a couple of months ago where all you need is just a mobile phone number and an or an IC number, an identity card number?
Yeah, sure. It's called PayNow and it's being offered by 7 banks there. And so people who want to receive payments will have to link their mobile and IC numbers to their accounts, either on the bank's website or through its mobile app. So it's set to start 10th July this year. I think Maybank is one of the banks involved as well. And but this was launched in July last year. And since then, more than 1 million users have registered with it. Which, I mean, that's about only 18% of the Singaporean population, right?
Right, because when you say it in absolute terms, it sounds like a lot of million users, but as you put it in percentage terms, it's not so much. I guess one thing to persuade the public of the value of this is to talk about the savings, right? I mean, the reason to go onto the e-payment space is really about the savings, because a lot of the transactions called like checks, you know, those paper checks that we issue, it actually is costly for the financial system, right?
Well, it's costly for the financial system, but what they're going to be doing is, I think, trying to incentivize people also to use this and pass some of those savings back to consumers. I think that's when you really get a takeoff.
So here we look at a population that's often very, I don't say pliable, but they're very easily persuaded by, you know, government because, you know, their policies seem to be, you know, rationally thought out and such. I mean, I'm just going by stereotype here. Mm-hmm. So the question is, what is going to encourage Singaporeans if they haven't really signed up in droves? What's going to encourage them to go cashless?
Okay, let's look, according to PayPal, 9 out of 10 Singaporeans actually prefer to pay things with cash. So last August, the Prime Minister of Singapore, Lee Hsien Loong, during his National Day speech, said that Singapore has actually too many e-payments solutions and too many different schemes and systems that don't talk to each other. So as a result of having for people to carrying multiple cards and businesses to install multiple readers, it's all very inconvenient. So they're looking at consolidating and making things easier. People still prefer cash and checks. 6 out of 10 transactions are actually, in fact, in Singapore, are made up of checks and cash.
You know, what's interesting, it used to be that the credit card was the main form of kind of cashless transaction, right? But it was limited to transactions over a certain amount. Like you couldn't use your credit card, you know, if it was less than 50 ringgit.
Right.
And that, I think, would have been a real inhibiting factor for people to use it because, you know, you often don't buy things over 50 ringgit. You know, you're going to the supermarket,
but
buy a loaf of bread.
Correct. And now you can just tap and wave your cards and pay for that. You don't have to pay with cash. And that's been implemented here in Malaysia as well. But I guess it's just not picking up enough or fast enough in Singapore. That's why they're encouraging.
I think Singapore,
they're coming
out
with these guidelines.
You know, Joyce, one of the things with Singapore is they often see themselves as a leader in financial services
so
forth. So when you look at China and how people are actually just embrace this whole e-payment revolution, they're actually behind the curve. So I suppose that's one of the reasons why the government is really pushing this forward.
Yeah, Brian, but except for China, do you know that an average of 88% of Asia-Pacific people here, I mean, we prefer cash in a way. But here in Malaysia, Bank Negara has said recently that a volume of individual internet banking transactions has grown more than threefold, from 141 million transactions in 2011 to 435 million in 2016.
You know, I was in India during the period in which the Narendra Modi government took two notes out of out of circulation, right? So the whole denomination project, that demonetization project that they had there. What was interesting was the ads that went on, you know, in the public sphere, which were encouraging people to say, well, you know, the cash is really something that people in the rural sector will need. You're an urbanite. You live in the city. You can do without cash. You know, don't put a burden on people from the rural sector by insisting on using cash. And because in India, when I was surprised. I could pay for a cup of coffee at not a nice restaurant, just a normal restaurant with my credit card. I mean, so this was, you know, just a couple of rupees.
Yeah, and in fact, that during that period, Sharad, particularly just after that, that really spurred the rise of e-payments and stuff like that in India.
In India, right. Okay, now speaking about Singapore, not India, our neighbours down south will be announcing their budget on Monday. That's the 19th of February. And economists are expecting a first GST hike in more than a decade.
Yeah, so policymakers have flagged the need to increase revenue to meet future social spending needs of a rapidly aging population there. So Singapore's current GST rate is 7%, ours is 6%. And their current corporate tax rate is 17% and their personal tax rate, highest rate, is 22%. So what economists are saying is that they're looking at potential hike, GST hike. There's also speculation that the government might make tweaks to taxes on e-commerce retailers such as Amazon.com, Wealth and Sugar. So, you know, remember in a radio interview last week, Singapore's Senior Minister of State for Law and Finance, Indrani Rajah, said the government is still studying the best way to implement an e-commerce tax. So she went on radio last week.
And this, of course, is the radio station that opened recently.
Money FM, right?
Money FM. You know, a lot of people crediting, BFM as inspiring that. In fact, yeah. Our managing director, Malik Ali, was interviewed by Money FM.
Yes, he was at the launch as well. And didn't he come over to kind of check out the studio and also what radio is
yes,
about?
Yes, they did. Yeah. They did come over to Kuala Lumpur, to our studios in Bandar Utama, to have a discussion. Now, we're coming up to the top of the hour, and after that, we'll be back with yet more news and analysis. We have the BBC World Service after the 9:30 bulletin, where we look at nuclear weapons. Ed Butler is doing a deep dive into a recent pledge by the US President Donald Trump to upgrade the country's nuclear deterrent. Also, we'll have Dodge Dolan, Chief Investment Officer, Land of Fuse Capital Managers in New York. All that coming up after the 9 o'clock bulletin. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.